Hello and welcome to the My Beautiful Life podcast. I am your co-host, Bryn Bish, and with me I have my husband and best friend, Sam Bish. We're going to kick off the launch of this podcast by interviewing Sam, where he is going to give us a bird's eye view into what it means to be Killian's father, his journey of sobriety, the challenges that he experiences being a full-time caregiver to Killian, what he has learned being exposed to the world of disability, and his experiences being the founder and executive director of Heart Warrior Ministries. That is a lot of information to go through, so let's go ahead and jump right in. Sam, did you ever think that you would be doing a podcast in your lifetime?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
About this?
Not these topics per se. Mm-hmm. Probably sports or maybe tech, but mm-hmm. not about me and my personality and mm-hmm. who I am and my experiences. But
a lot of people are interested in that.
I like baseball. I'd love to talk about baseball, but
well, maybe we'll get to a baseball episode.
I would love that. Yeah, go Guards.
Go Guards, yes. So in today's episode, we are learning all about Sam because he's a little bit of a mystery, I think, to some of our followers. And as many of you can imagine, he played a very integral role in being the rock of our family. And a lot of people have expressed interest in learning a little bit more about him. So Sam, you've always wanted to be a dad.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, being a dad to Killian is quite special. Throughout this podcast, you're going to be talking about a lot of things. You're mm-hmm. a founder of a nonprofit organization. You were a Marine. You are now a PTOT, full-time caregiver, doctor, nurse to Killian.
Might as well go to PT school at this point.
Yeah, honestly, really.
Yeah.
I think, you know, all of these experiences have, shaped you to be the person you are today, but it all came from somewhere, mm-hmm. right? And you're doing all of it really well. So tell us about what it was like to, become a father and how your role model of being a father was shaped.
I mean, looking back on my childhood, I idolize my dad in a lot of ways. I mean, and he's probably listening to this and we're probably gonna laugh about it later, but just how he carried himself, how he was so dedicated to our family, how he was always there at sporting events, how he would always help me talk through situations. And there's different aspects of that. There's times to be hard on your kids. There's times to just sit and listen. And he was just a great example of that. Still is. As soon as the Guardians won in the ALDS, he was the first person I called. So, yeah.
So, in other words, Walt is the GOAT.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah. What aspects of, your childhood and your dad being your dad mm-hmm. did you want to carry forth and through into Killian's life?
He was always present. He was always setting a good example. If you asked him a question, he would always answer. And if he didn't know the answer, he would tell you that he would find out the answer or we would find it together. Just very intentional, very present.
And setting aside the pride, it sounds like, of not being, I feel like for men, they have this pressure of needing to know it all.
Yeah, exactly. And not being boastful. You know, my dad was never somebody to really, I mean, still to this, I'm talking like he's not with us anymore. I mean, my dad is very alive and very much well, but was never extremely boastful about anything, he did in terms of, in a bragging nature, I think mm-hmm. is what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as I can remember, growing up every Saturday morning when I would wake up to come downstairs and have my cereal and watch cartoons or play video games, he was already downstairs reading his Bible.
Every morning.
I mean, whenever I would wake up that early before anybody else, I mean, other than my dad, but yeah. And, he would never sit and brag about that. It's just he knew that spending time in the Word and mm-hmm. time with God mm-hmm. or reading, whatever it might be, that was his, that was his time to be the best him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I look back on that with just such admiration.
Holding that ideal stance of how you wanted to father Killian, tell us about how the complexities that we faced with a medically complex child has either encouraged that image or made it more challenging?
I think a lot of the day-to-day now is building those habits for myself so that way I can be impressionable when he does remember it. Knowing how I want to be when he is older and in is more impressionable, I think that's the most important thing that, you know, I think of right now in the day-to-day. And it's hard. And a lot of distractions nowadays. I mean, when we were dating and first married, I mean, you know me, I was high tech, wanting to have all the newer gadgets and everything. And I've stopped wearing my Apple Watch since then and have really not downgraded, but just focused on the more important things, you know, less distraction.
You have. You've sacrificed a lot in this past year. And I think anybody who knew you a year ago knows how different you are and how much better you are.
It all dates back to selling my nice gaming PC to buy your engagement ring.
That's where it all began.
That's where the sacrifice began. Yeah, just one after another.
No, but I mean, you gave up drinking, which was huge. Being a former Marine, drinking was, I mean, you knew
that's part of the culture right there.
You knew every IPA. It was, you had it down to a science. At one point you said that you wanted to brew your own beer in the future. I mean, this was like, it's a cultural part of your life.
It was, I wouldn't say a defining part of me, but I would say, you know, it was a big part of my personality for a long time.
You were, like you said, you stopped wearing an Apple Watch for the sole reason of you felt like it was too distracting and you weren't as present. You know, all of those things, I mean, proof is in the pudding, right? These are all things you told me when we were dating of like, this is the kind of dad and father I want to be. And, you know, you were rough around the edges. But what I saw was someone who was dedicated to wanting to change.
But when you meet the right person and you get more serious about life and what you want out of life, you realize that some things just aren't relevant or they don't help you get to where you want to be.
Okay, so I mentioned that you were a Marine. How do you feel like being a Marine has helped you navigate being the founder and executive director of a nonprofit? You know, being Killian's full-time caregiver, to, you know, just being, I think one of what I'm trying to get to is one of the challenges that we have in our marriage is that we are forced to have, for reasons we will get into, kind of this reverse breadwinner homemaker model. And that's challenging. It's challenging in the marriage. It's challenging in the family of how to preserve things like femininity and masculinity when we are in these very opposite roles.
Going 100% against the cultural and social norm.
But it's absolutely because of my disability and limitations in being able to care for a child like Killian, we absolutely have to do it. And you are a Marine, you were a Marine, and you know, so how, and you've also had to, we've had to navigate so many complex challenges early on in our marriage. Within our first year of marriage, we spent a year in the hospital. Our first anniversary was actually in the ICU.
Yes, it was.
You know, we had to move something like 5 times in 1 year. I mean, just life was, we were homeless at one point. Like, life was absolutely bonkers for the first year and was so unstable. And yet you showed things like being a leader, and you led and navigated our family out of a very dark and scary part of our life. So how did that help you? How did your Marine training help you navigate all of those complexities?
Yeah, I think there's two main key phrases that I'll emphasize on. One being obviously the motto of the Marine Corps, which is Semper Fidelis, always faithful. And then the next concept being, you know, improvise, adapt, and overcome. So I'll back up and start with the first. I mean, always faithful. You think, you know, you sign a contract to serve either the United States and the Marine Corps itself. You're committing to being faithful to that organization and doing what is asked of you and filling that role that you signed up for. You can think of starting a family and becoming a father in the same way. You are committing to, you know, this change in your lifestyle. You're committing to not only just your wife anymore, but also your children who are dependent on you. Now that dependency, you know, it's, you know, different for us. Obviously, the financial aspect of it necessarily isn't on me, but that dependency of Killian needs to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to be carried from point A to point B. He needs to be, you know, walked up three flights of stairs at a doctor's appointment, you know, those aspects, those are on me, and I have to be faithful to my commitment and carry out what needs to be done. Regarding the improvising and adapting and overcoming, I feel like that is a daily challenge in and of itself. You know, I'm a creature of habit, and you know this. I tend to do the same morning routine every day. That isn't always the case with our life and, you know, what God has blessed us with, but also challenged us with. I mean, we got married. We expected to have, you know, a healthy child, settle down in New England, and here we are in Maryland with a child with CHD and cerebral palsy. So
and living with your in-laws.
And living with my in-laws, yes,
yeah.
Who are fantastic, by the way.
Yes, we love them.
Yes, but yeah. You have this idea of where your life is going to go, and you know, God, you know, obviously has His plans, and that those plans are sometimes what you're thinking, but oftentimes they're not. And the ability to improvise on the spot when God's plan starts to take effect and it's different than yours, adapt to it, and then you overcome any challenges that might be in front of you to get to that point. Yeah, so
I think one thing that I heard from that, and one thing I want to elaborate on is I think it's so cool how God sees the journey that we are going to go down together. Like the day that we met, the day that we fell in love, the day that we said I do, all of that. God saw all of this unraveling. And He knew that I needed someone, my polar opposite, in order for us to carry us through. And I think one of the beautiful things about this journey is that it really forced us, like brute forced us, to see each other's differences as strengths, because there was absolutely no way that we were going to get through what we needed to get through by seeing it any different. And one of the things that I love, and I'll get to this question in a second, but one of the things that I love is that you always knew that it was going to be okay. Like, that was something that you always told me, whether you believed it or not. And we'll get to actually how that was hindering in some ways. But you always taught me to see the hope that it could be worse, right? Like, you had this ability to navigate and create a plan no matter how dire the circumstance. And there were so many times that I wanted to give up. I mean, there were so many times that you had pep talks with me in the ICU, wanting to give up, wanting to just run away, wanting to just escape. And you said, no, like we have to create a plan and we have to tackle this. And I think God knew that I needed someone with your background and personality, like very easygoing, but also quick, decisive, able to adapt, and just be able to lead in chaos. And that was exactly what you did. Which was, you know, kind of cool to think about.
Yeah.
And that's what love is really about. And we'll get into this later, but, like, what a lot of people don't also realize is you were my first, like, real boyfriend.
Bum, bum, bum.
Right.
Wow. I say that like I didn't know.
I went on probably, like, 200-plus dates. But I knew I was the person who knew exactly what I wanted. I knew the standards that I had. I was always told your standards are too high. You need to lower them.
We'll go into your four Fs.
My four Fs.
At some point.
That's right. My criteria, my scorecard, that kept me from skeevy guys and kept me to the Sams. And it worked. But
the interview that took place.
The interview. It was quite literally an interview. But I got real scared because you checked all the boxes. And God was 100% telling me to pursue you, and I got scared. But it's, you know, it goes to show you that God's providence and plan, no matter what bad takes place, always reigns and is always sovereign in so many ways. And that's just one aspect, I think, that God has shown his faithfulness. So Let's talk a little bit about our relationship. You know, I think a lot of people reach out to me and say, like, you have it so together. You know, you have it. It just looks like you guys know what to do. You're mastering it. You're navigating it well. And part of this podcast is also to show you that there are a lot of things we did wrong. There are, you know, we learned and we have this strong of a relationship because we've admitted that we fall short every day. And we are really committed to two things, which is getting closer and growing closer to God first. And then getting closer to each other. That's the order of operations.
The triangle, right?
The triangle. We'll talk about the triangle in another podcast. But talk about how, you know, I would love to express to viewers how much we didn't have it together. It absolutely could have been worse. And I think that that triangle that we'll, again, that formulaic triangle that we'll talk about in more detail in another podcast was the thing that saved us. And it was the thing that took adversity and had us draw closer to each other. So tell me about, I'm interested in, you know, this tie between your experiences, because when I first met you, I was very, on date one, and again, we'll talk about this in a future podcast, but I was very clear to you on day one of what you were signing up with a girl who has a disability like mine. SMA, spinal muscular atrophy. It's a neurodegenerative, meaning it's going to get worse my whole life. And you said, yeah, I know what I'm signing up for. And I thought you were crazy. I said, there's absolutely no way you know what you're signing up for. And he's like, I do. I literally researched it because I saw that you had SMA.
When we were messaging, even, well, in context, we met on a dating app. So I mean, before we even met in person, you had told me about it, so you know, I'm not gonna, I felt that it would be rude not to do some sort of like understanding of what it was before we actually met, you know what I mean? So
you know, also your Marine experiences tie into our relationship as well, and how you know, dating with somebody who has a physical weakness and also now has a child with CP and physical weakness, like it can really put a lot of stress on the marriage. So we'll get into this and we'll tease this experience out of you being a husband and a father in this kind of relationship. But what have you learned from life with disability? Like you had a pre-exposure, you had a life where you were not exposed to people and kids with disabilities. And then in dating and marrying me, you've now had an experience of being married to somebody who has a disability, and it has gotten worse with pregnancy. You know, and then now also having a son who has a disability. Has that changed your perspective and heart on how you view the world and other people?
I would say I was always kind of a patient person. Maybe you disagree, but I felt like I was always pretty patient in most situations. This life that we live, I feel like, has significantly increased my patience, my understanding, having a more caring attitude and thought about what other people might be going through. So maybe less selfish in a way.
Less judgmental.
Less judgmental, yes, thank you. Things slow down. With disability, life slows down. And that's not always a bad thing. But just learning how to work with that slowed down lifestyle and just being able to appreciate it for what it is and appreciate, you know, you for who you are and not, you know, the ability to go on a hike or something. I don't know, I'm using a random example, but yeah, just patience. Because even with Killian's day-to-day in therapy, you know what needs to happen. You see the therapist put him in different positions, or, you know, situate his arms and his legs in a way that'll increase, you know, his muscle and his capabilities. There's days where he does great with it. there's days where he wants nothing to do about anything other than sitting and reading a book. Mm. And obviously, the more you do an activity, the easier it becomes. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, a 20-month-old doesn't understand doesn't understand that I have to work on this for it to get better. So that patience really plays in with really plays in on those days where we don't necessarily have a therapist coming to the home or a therapy appointment, but rather I'm doing therapy at home with them. Just being able to have that, like, okay, right now in this moment is not a moment where we're going to do sit to stands and we're going to work on, you know, weight bearing through our arms. Right now is a moment where you just need a book read to you, or you just want to move the beads on the little box and you want Dada to make, you know, funny noises, which plays into that patience. So,
and I think that's something interesting too, that we've really talked about too, is having this opposite breadwinner homemaker model. The challenges of being able to meet certain needs of the child and also being the father.
Yeah. Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
That's a hard one.
Mr. Mom. So, you know, you're certainly not the only one. I think this is becoming more popular as jobs are getting harder to have. And, you know, we're just in more of a modern era where that is getting more acceptable. But it's also not accepted, especially in the Christian world.
It really depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Some
people have very strong opinions about
it. It is hard. I mean, I think even my men's group, every week, I'm the only stay-at-home dad in that group.
Yeah.
I'm the only one with those challenges, with that experience. Can I relate to other dads talking about their experience at their corporate job? Yeah. I mean, I lived that life. I did that for many years. But that's not who I am right now. And that's not my day-to-day experience anymore. So it's hard sharing and opening up, I will say. You know, it obviously depends on the group of people and how comfortable you are, but talking through topics and discussion points in a men's group focuses a lot around that, you know, breadwinner model, going to work, facing those challenges, leadership in the workplace, all very important things, you know, great topics of discussion. But it's hard to open up about those leadership traits in terms of I'm staying home and, you know, I'm struggling with, you know, nap time and how do I navigate feeding challenges. I'm trying to think of examples.
How to be empathetic
Exactly. How do I be empathetic to your son with medical complications that, you know, doesn't want to eat food? That is not something the average dad has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. That is my entire life. That is my every day. And it's just, it's hard. It's hard to actually, number one, want to open up and talk about it. But number two, finding somebody that gets it.
Yeah. And then also for yourself intrinsically, how do you preserve things like, you know, being the man, being the, you know, and doing all of that. So, you know, this isn't a relationship where it's like modern femininity where I feel like I wear the pants in this relationship. We work really, you know, we work hard to preserve the traditional role of femininity and masculinity, but we're just in a very opposite situation. And so I think crafting that is really difficult.
And it's probably going to sound super basic, but I think what it comes down to a lot for us at least is communication.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's been several times where I've really been struggling with this and
you're like, I need to go build something.
Literally, like, can I go to like build a shed with your dad or something? But
I need to go weed whack, chop down a tree.
Exactly. Communication is super important. And it might sound super basic and it is a very basic concept, but actually putting it into practice, that's obviously the hard part. Communicating when you especially, at least I'm talking in terms of myself, how we've kind of dealt with it. Opening up and just telling you, hey, I feel like just a mom today. Like, I need to do X, Y, and Z. Can we squeeze this into the schedule at some point this week or in the next day or so? And I mean, I think it even has kind of allowed us to shift how we handle our responsibilities on a day-to-day basis for our family, right? Like, you know, you feeling like you were put more into this, you know, I have to be the provider. I have to be this, you know, in charge of X, Y, and Z, finances included. And I said, well, I can handle finances. I can take over a majority of the finance stuff. I can handle budgeting through the, you know, day to day. Like, why don't you just pass that off to me? And that's something that allows me to feel like a dad because I'm handling that big responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's taking that off of your plate so you don't have to feel like as much of a, I'm the provider, and I then get some of that, I'm the provider.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thing because I feel so limited in my ability to.
Yeah, that's a whole other.
Of being able to be a mom in order to, you know, take care of Killian. Like, if I can't do a bedtime routine, I can't give him a bath. I can't put him to sleep.
If he wakes up in the middle of the night and needs to be held,
I can't do that. Yeah. So I feel so limited, and so it sharpens my like. Well, I have to excel in my career, and I have to, you know, and be this provider, quote unquote. And so it kind of channels the, well, I'll just take care of everything because it's almost like a guilty cycle of I can't take care of my children and my son. So this is what I can take care of.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, providing that level of communication of like, hey, Bren, like I am working a lot with Killian, but I want to do this. Like, and this will help you and me feel a little bit more comfortable with our situation. And we'll tease a lot more details out into this particular setup. But one thing I, you know, wanted to segue into is, you know, we're coming up on 1 year of sobriety.
Yeah.
And I don't think you've actually talked quite a bit about it.
No, I haven't.
I mean, the people around you and who love you and, and know about you know about
my
it.
My close friends and family, obviously, I've talked to about it. Yeah.
I mean, this has been, a lot of people are doing it as a trendy thing. For us, I think it's a little bit different. I think it's more of a long-term thing. Tell us about the mindset shift that made you want to say no to such a big part of your culture.
Who I was,
You know, give us a bird's eye view. We'll have a whole episode dedicated to understanding the facets of this decision, but give us a bird's eye view.
Well, I think it really, so I had that base, you know, already set from, you know, and I'm not fully blaming the Marine Corps by any means, but that is the social norm when you serve in the military. I mean, everybody drinks, a majority of people smoke or dip. So it's kind of just socially acceptable to, you know, have a beer or six every day, you know, so.
You round up, right?
Yeah. One equals five. But, so anyway, having that base already set, it made it more internally for me to just be okay. And, you know, you think you go through these stressful days, especially when we were in the hospital, and that's kind of where the crux of the issue lied for me. But, you know, Killian's in the hospital. You're spending every single day sitting in a stressful environment in the hospital. What's the one thing you want to do? You want to unwind. You want to just not feel so stressed. What's an easy thing you can turn to that was already built into my base mindset was I'll just have a drink.
Yeah. I think this is also, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but before you segued into the next part, I think the added pressure in the ICU setting, which is something that you now kind of help other dads navigate, is you felt like you had to have it all together.
Yeah.
And so talk about that, because I think that there's also, for as much good that came out of the, you know, your experiences in the Marines, also came a little bit of bad, which is having this stoic mentality. And
don't show emotion.
Yeah. And so was that also a pretty big significant factor for, do you feel like if you were open more, that would have prevented?
I mean, I would say even still, you know, being almost a year sober, I mean, do you consider, I don't feel like I'm super emotional. Do you think I'm super emotional?
I think you are more emotionally aware than most men.
Okay.
I don't want to say emotional because that can have a negative connotation.
Sitting in the corner crying every day.
Yeah, like that's to me, that's not what emotional means. Emotional, I think you have a higher EQ, emotional intelligence, than the average guy. Because you're able to read situations even in me and other people.
That's fair.
Really, really well. Like, you're able to pick up on conflict and perceive people really well.
Yeah.
So I think that also makes high stress situations a little bit more emotional filled.
That's fair. Okay. I get where you're going with that. Not emotionally absent.
So before I cut you off, you were saying that being in this high stress environment, you needed an outlet. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Marine Corps that was the outlet the Marine Corps.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, I'm not saying the Marine Corps specifically told you to have a drink when you're in a stressful situation, because obviously that's, nobody's going to teach you that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's more the fact that it was a social norm, and all of my best friends that I served with, that was kind of just what everybody did. That's kind of what I just turned to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the point that you were hitting on is you feel like you have to have everything together. You feel like you have to be this, emotional rock, this person that your wife can lean on, you can answer questions for a doctor and confront your crying wife all within 5 minutes. It's obviously very stressful. It's something that, I guess other people looking at felt like maybe I had it all together. I'm making it up on the fly. I still feel like I'm making it up on the fly a lot of the times.
You're doing a stellar job.
But it's... that environment every day, all day, 12 to 14 hours nonstop, you are just more prone to wanting to do those I need to unwind type of activities. And mm-hmm. I know our schedule, it was, one night you're staying there, one night I'm staying there. Sometimes, depending on the nurse, they would let us both stay there. And that was a whole thing, sleeping. But obviously, the longer you're in an environment like that, the more being in an environment like that every day, all day for 12 to 14 hours, sometimes even longer. That's the first thing you want to do after that is unwind. Those types of days consistently every single day, all week, no break, months on end, that becomes a habit. And that becomes something where, be completely honest, I was having at least, I don't know how many drinks, probably at least 3, 4, maybe 5 every single day.
Yeah.
Just to, not have to think about things mm-hmm. when it was my turn to be able to stay at the apartment or mm-hmm. Whatever it may be. I mean, it gets to the point where I was so reliant on that I need to unwind mm-hmm. that I couldn't function without having that unwind.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until moments happened like the move when we came back here, stuff in storage, and even just a simple idea of me going and waiting at a storage unit, seeing that there's a brewery across the street. Oh, I'll just go have a couple of drinks while I wait for the drivers to get here to drop off the stuff. Putting away three or four, high content IPAs, and I'm showing up and I can't, fully think through where things need to go. Like, obviously that was my catalyst moment, and without going too far into detail, but mm-hmm. that's where it's like, what am I doing? Like, mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be this person that Bryn can rely on, that Killian can rely on. And I'm here handling this task that is something that I can handle mm-hmm. in terms of like a physical capability.
Yeah.
And I'm not even handling that.
Yeah.
And it just became so habitual, and so I need to do this in order to feel like I'm functioning, mm-hmm. that obviously that catalyst moment happened, but I'm sitting there like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I'm in this position where I have so much influence over, our family, and I'm wasting it away in a sense. Mm-hmm. And
I think what's interesting is I was not even nurturing you in one direction or another. I was so consumed in my own grief with being out of the hospital and sorting through my own stuff at the same, like at parallel times, we were both just really going through some stuff individually. Mm-hmm. That this was fully your decision, like this, your decision to walk away. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really cool to paint that picture, because at the end of the day, it was a cost benefit for you, mm-hmm. of, you know, like, what is this adding and what's the cost of me adding it? Mm-hmm. And how is that preventing me from doing so many things? And that was really the beginning of us saying, learning how to say no.
Yeah.
In order to say yes to other things. Mm-hmm. How to say no to a lot of the chaff, a lot of the fat in our life that wasn't, you know, necessarily terrible, but it also wasn't excelling us to our full potential.
Yeah.
And so I think that I have a ton of questions on that topic. Mm-hmm. But the biggest takeaway that I've heard you say in our conversations of your decision to do that has been that you don't, you know, we grew up thinking, especially in the church, mm-hmm. you have these examples of like these full blown alcoholics, right?
Yeah.
You wake up and you have to have a fifth in order to like at 9 a.m. in order to function.
Replacing water bottles with just vodka.
Yeah. Like you grow up with those kind of like really silly, and it's like, this is what it can become. And so it creates like this black and white mentality of like, oh, if I'm anything south of that, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing that we've both talked about, cause I've also decided to go sober to support you and also to, you know, again, in that decision process of what are we willing to say no to? That was one of them for me as well. And so, you know, it's the thing that I've realized in your journey and just witnessing you evolve is that it doesn't have to mount to that in order for you to say no. Like mm-hmm. it's just enough for you to say, I have one drink and I don't make good decisions, or mm-hmm. I don't like the person that I become, or I don't like that headache after. And that's enough for you to say no.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to creep into this. I think you were headed there. Mm. I think I had seen signs of you heading there. Drinks earlier in the day, more frequent. Mm. I never addressed any of them because, again, I was at my own expense working through some things after we got out of the hospital. But I saw it headed there. Mm. But it doesn't have to get there in order for you to say no.
And you know, this is obviously not me sitting here saying, like, you know, everybody should be sober. Nobody should drink.
Absolutely not.
I think it ultimately came down to the fact that, you know, I lost control of being able to, you know, limit or, you know, recognizing that there is a time and place for that, you know, quote unquote unwind mm-hmm. or not even just unwind, just like that specifically. Mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, I needed to have it. Mm-hmm. I needed the control was gone. Mm-hmm. The ability for me to say no, drinks are just for Friday and Saturday night. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, oh no, it's a Tuesday at 6 p.m. I need to go get a six pack, or mm-hmm. you know, I need to add two shots of bourbon to my Coke for dinner.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the control. And now looking at the habits that I've built now, and you know, how I view my days and my schedule. Looking back on how I was, I'm pretty confident that I would be able to control it now with my mindset. However, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where I don't even want to expose myself to the temptation mm-hmm. to be able to fall back into the same trap and lose, you know, that control again.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
And I think that's true power, right? Is like a power over it.
That's fair, yeah.
Is to say like, yeah, I could probably live a normal life with it.
And I don't want that to come off as like braggy or anything, but.
But we don't have to, you know, have this mea culpa of like, I'm a slave to alcohol and that's why I have to say no.
Totally fair.
You know, I think the true power of, you know, sobriety is saying I could reintroduce it and it would probably be okay. I wouldn't, because the stressor I've been able to mediate. Mm-hmm. I've been able to come to my own resolve. It's not a crutch. But now, you know, I think the true power over it is still saying no mm-hmm. and still like recognizing I am a better person for it.
Yeah.
Without it. So why would I want to go back? Why would I really want to, you know, it's like picking.
I've seen the improvement. So why would I want to take a step back?
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. Yes. We'll talk more about all of this, what mm-hmm. you've learned from it. benefits that you've had over the past year. We're going to talk all about that. My journey in supporting you in your sobriety over the past year and, and what that looked like. And teasing out, again, a lot of those kind of finer-tuned questions. But that was a kind of a bird's-eye view of that experience. I'd like to segue into our last topic, which is talking about you being the executive director of a nonprofit.
Yeah. Talk about a job. Talk about a job I never in a million years thought that I would be doing. And still feel like I have no idea what I'm doing.
It's,
but
as one of our advisors told us, it's like, what was it? Building the plane as you fly it?
Building the plane as you're flying it, or flying the plane as you build it, or something like that.
That's what it's, you always feel like you're two steps behind or maybe a half step ahead. And that half step ahead doesn't stay there.
Yeah. Well, not only that, it's deceiving. You might think that you're a half step ahead and then you think through something and you're like, oh crap.
I should have had that ready. Oh, someone wants to talk to us about a, you know, corporate donation. Really should have had that pitch prepared.
We need to have a packet together for that. PowerPoint presentation. What?
Yep. It's it's not perfect.
No.
It's very.
It's not perfect. It's but we're passionate about it. Yeah. And obviously, with our experiences, it's something that we want to give back to other families that are currently going through or are soon to go through what we have and are still going through.
Yes.
If I'm being honest. But
now I'm the mouthpiece of, you know, so much. I lead the social media page, the, you know, Killian's page. But what people don't know is that you lead, I would say 90% of it. You steer the ship. And it was actually an idea that was created by you while we were in the ICU. So tell us about how it started.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, your day to day in the hospital, you know, not only just drinking to unwind, but I'm very, I guess you could say, passionate about video games. I'm a nerd, hardcore nerd. Love playing video games.
For the record, I found the perfect mix for a husband, which is a nerd, a gaming nerd, who is also from Cleveland. You will have loyalty, and they also will not get into trouble because all you have to do is give them video game nights.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, it's the perfect mix of a husband.
Yes.
Proceed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So yeah, in the hospital, enjoy playing video games. It's always been a passion of mine ever since I was little. But I had the thought of, you know, obviously there's other dads out there that are going through, you know, what I'm going through. There has to be, you know, a subsect of that, enjoy playing video games. But not only that, I found it very hard to relate to the average dad in a way. You know, you have conversations with, you know, friends, family, whoever that, you know, are also dads, and you know, they're sitting there talking about how they're frustrated that, you know, their child is teething or they didn't eat all of their lunch. They only had part of it. And, you know, because of that, they had a bad nap or something like that. And I just found it very hard to relate to that. I mean, especially when we're literally day in and day out of the hospital and you're seeing, you know, so many tubes coming in and out of your child that you can't even count them. And the challenges that in and of itself, it was just hard to relate to other people that don't have that experience or don't fully understand what we were and, you know, sometimes still are going through.
Yeah.
So I had the thought of, obviously, I enjoy playing video games. I have this experience as a dad. There have to be other dads out there that have this same experience. That are either still going through it, have went through it, that also enjoy playing video games. So my thought was, how about I try to set up a support group, or I don't even want to call it I wasn't even calling it a support group at the time. It was just a online community server of just dads that enjoy playing video games that have some sort of experience with a medically complex child. So as I kind of thought through how would that work, what would that look like, what would be like criteria, what are, you know, rules of, you know, conversation, like how do I moderate this, how do I make it work, talking about advertisements with, you know, the social workers and whatnot, it was kind of made known, like, hey, like, you know, that's a great idea, we're in support of it, but we can't necessarily talk about it or share it unless it's like some sort of registered, you know, nonprofit or like a charity organization. So it's a great idea, but maybe just save it for like the online Facebook groups to share it. You know, don't, you know, we can't do anything about that here. So knowing that it had to be some sort of charity organization in order to really be able to kind of spread the word and get things out there. I think it was just, we had a talk of like, why don't we just try to make a nonprofit? Not necessarily just out of the dads group, but we also kind of felt a conviction in a way of like, there has to be a way to give back to this community. Yeah. Like, we were so blessed in so many ways by so many different people, you know, whether it be, you know, the Fisher House providing our housing because I was a veteran, whether it be, you know, our Boston mom, Dale, taking care of us with food and care packages, you know, so frequently.
GoFundMe
money. Exactly. The campaign that was set up by your family for us. Like, we were taken care of in so many ways that, you know, by the grace of God, we were able to make it through without having to put things on a credit card. Talking to these other families, that's not always the case. And very, very infrequently is that the case for many of these families. So there, it was kind of a conviction in a way of like, we need to give back in a way. Like, we were so taken care of, these other families need to be taken care of too. So I'm talking through the gaming group. We're talking about this. It kind of was just like a, hey, let's make a nonprofit out of this. Like, let's try to do something. Let's try to make a difference. Let's try to help these families, the ones that we still talk to very frequently. And it just kind of spun from there.
That is all we have for you guys today. We will be taking a deeper dive look into all of the topics that we just breezed over today. In our next podcast, Sam will be interviewing me about my life in academia, living life with a progressive neurological disease called spinal muscular atrophy, and the challenges that such a life can bring, like parenting a disabled child with someone who has a disability themselves, maintaining positivity in a life with chronic illness, and other such related topics. So if you like what you heard, make sure that you subscribe. Thank you for joining. We'll see you next time.